All right, welcome everybody to Dojo Talks, the Great Eval Bar Debate. Before we get into anything, I just want to say I'm really happy to have Grandmaster Jan Ludwig here with us today. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to try and formulate some opinions. Uh-huh. In a bit of a more yet generous format as pertains to words and characters and such things.
All right. Exactly. I mean, I saw a bunch of tweets and I thought I can't say anything I want to say here on Twitter. So let's invite Hammer to the show, where we often get, sometimes we miss a little bit, but we often get into real discussions here on the show. So I'm hoping that we can do better there. But, you know, I am hoping to change Hammer's mind today. But because of that, I want to make clear from the outset that, you know, Hammer is a friend. We're on good terms. There's nothing aggressive about this. You know, I love him very much. It's awesome that he's here with us and we've only had good times together in the past. He almost made it into my song Chess Nation because he was at that tournament at Capelle Lagrande, where I wrote it. Do you want to hear an unpublished line about you, Jan?
Sure.
Okay. So this didn't make it into the final version of the song, but I had Panda upright sleeping, Vinaya keeping the beat, and we're standing in the cold with a goofy teen Norwegian. You were young back then, man.
I was very young.
Yeah. And you had a really, really great smile. So, yeah, you've always been a really fun, upbeat person. So, yeah. Dojo, welcome, Grandmaster Jan Ludwig Hammer. Before we get into our main topic, we're also going to do a quick round.
Actually, David, I'm really glad you said that about how this is a friendly discussion, because I just want to start off like, this debate has gone surprisingly heated for Chess Twitter. I don't know exactly why it's gotten so heated. So I'm glad we're setting the tone straight from the beginning. But yeah, go on.
Yeah. I wanted to, you know, make the effort so people don't misconstrue, you know. And even, like, it's so easy to get tones wrong and everything, right? Even on Twitter, I was like, I don't want to say anything aggressive, but I'm just like, how about we talk about this? But someone could even be like, oh, that's aggressive. He's inviting some stranger onto his show to yell at him instead of like tweeting or whatever. I'm like, it's nothing like that. Just want to have a civilized conversation, you know? But because we're exactly halfway through the candidates, we thought we would do a quick round the table about what we think of the first half. So Jan Ludwig, as the guest, would you like to go first or not?
Sure. About the candidates?
Yeah, impressions on the first half of the event.
Yeah, I'm doing commentary on Hikaru's channel. So I'm very much in the Hikaru game kind of mindset and focus. I've seen a lot of the other games, but I haven't studied them nearly as closely as I have Hikaru's. And I think it's such a pity that Hikaru couldn't take the win yesterday against Nepomniachtchi, because had he won that game, we would have had a five-way tie for first, which I think just would have been incredible. My big impressions so far, Pragnananda, incredible bravery in his openings. He's playing varied openings and he's playing some very aggressive things within the openings he's choosing. I think Jan Nepomniachtchi's preparation with the white pieces has been just stellar. In particular, his game against Alireza Firouzja, the opening prep there with the doubled pawns in front of his king. He sacrificed a pawn and gave himself a broken kingside pawn structure and then rushed his pawn up the king. I thought it was just a spectacular, spectacular concept, and then he sees it through for the win. So I think Pragnananda, his bravery and And Nepomniachtchi's White Prep are the standouts for me.
Cool. And overall, you're enjoying watching the event and doing it through the lens of Hikaru's games.
Yeah, I mean, it's a job, right? We're having a lot of fun on the stream. We're focusing only on Hikaru's games. We're not really stopping by the others very much. And it leaves the question, right? Do you want to do full focus on chess, or do you want to have a bit of fun and talk about just random things as well? And I feel like we have a very nice atmosphere going, which I think is very important, where we definitely take the chess super seriously, evidenced by the fact that, you know, I'm doing the commentary, and that's as far as chess qualifications. I think I'm highly qualified to talk about even the very top echelons of the game. But we also try, we have a lot of fun. We make a lot of jokes. We have some funny chatters and try to bring out their best comments. And so it's just a good time. I have noticed that the Reddit doesn't even show Hikaru's stream as one of the broadcasts, but you know, I'm hoping that in the second half of the tournament, we're that entertaining and that funny that we'll even make it to the Reddit preview thread.
Yeah, that's a bummer. We're not on there either, although we've been getting some love on Reddit for our stream. But yeah, I don't think we're in the official list ourselves.
Maybe there's a niche list somewhere on Reddit.
Yeah, niche list.
Yeah, we'd be top of the niche list. I just want to say real quick about the candidates. I think it's been super fun to follow. I've been most impressed by Gukesh and Prague specifically, just because I feel like they've shown some incredible maturity. Obviously, Gukesh yesterday had a bit of a heartbreaker, but I think he's still just been definitely outperforming my expectations for him. I think Nepo's been incredibly impressive. And although we didn't really rank Nepo highly before the tournament, I'm so upset at all the fans that think he's just getting lucky. I think that's like so ridiculous. Like, you don't lead 2.5 candidates tournaments by just strictly being lucky, like not at this level. I think he's just extremely solid, great preparation, great defensive skill, seizing his chances. Like, I think he's a fully deserving leader for the moment.
I know we said we would let each other talk about the candidates thing, but one thing I think is super interesting about Nepomniachtchi is that he's never lost a game in the candidates and then had to play another game the day after or 2 days afterwards. He lost game 7 in 2020 when the tournament got postponed and everyone had to leave Russia. So he got a full year to deal with that loss, and he was still in the lead as the tournament resumed. He also lost game 14 in 2021 when the tournament resumed, but he had already won the tournament, so losing the last round didn't actually matter. And then for 2022, the guy freakishly didn't lose a single game while managing to win, what was it, 5?
5.
And he just... So what I'm saying is that I'm very curious to see if he loses a game, how he copes with it, because he didn't cope very well against Magnus in the World Championship.
Mm-hmm. Here.
Yeah, but first he has to lose, and he's just looking like almost invincible so far. Okay, well, I have more thoughts on the candidates, but that's not the topic for today. So,
yeah.
Okay, I'll give my quick spiel because we got a big topic. But to me, the overwhelming thing when you look at the cross table is where Ali Reza is at number 7. 2.5 points. And the story is really like he doesn't belong there in terms of his skill level. But the story to me is the guy's on tilt. And even the game he won yesterday against Gukesh, it was like a miracle win. It was this queen b3 just came out of nowhere. That was lucky. I'll tell you that, my friend. Having that was lucky. So that has been like the disruptor in the tournament, this guy, and it's like a wrecking ball and it could go either way. And so it's a real like wild card situation that I think is going to continue like that in the second half of the tournament. And I always want to, I have to ask Hammer this question because he knows Magnus best and Hikaru best. What something I've said on stream, and I don't, it's just my intuition. I just want you to get a quick take. Is it true that the one person who could win this thing and really tug at Magnus's ego to pull him back into the game would be Naka? Is that true?
I think beating Naka would be something Magnus would really want to do in a world championship match.
Yeah.
But now that he gave the title away, it's just never going to happen, because even if Naka were to win the candidates and then the title,
yeah,
it would be too difficult for Magnus to get through the candidates tournament, I think. Because once you've given away the title, winning a world championship match is significantly easier than winning the candidates tournament. Having only one opponent compared to having seven and having to only win one game in the world championship versus having to win maybe five if Nepomniachtchi goes on a crazy bender. Those are two very different things. And Magnus, the one time he did play this candidates format in the past, he was incredibly close to not qualifying.
Right.
I just think now that he's out for good, because the candidates tournament is too grueling, and he can do, and what he will do instead, and this is going to happen, I'm positive of it, even if it was canceled last year in November, they wanted to do a Carlsen versus Nakamura match in, I think it was Vegas or Los Angeles or something. Vegas, and yeah. even if that was canceled, it is coming at some point. And they don't need a world championship on the line to be motivated to beating each other.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what my take on it so far is that the chess has been super interesting. Lots and lots of fresh ideas. I remember being excited for previous candidates because, you know, it was Duda playing in the candidates for the first time, Rapport playing in the candidates for the first time. I thought there's, you know, Faruja playing in the candidates for the first time. I thought they'd bring a lot of energy and new ideas and so forth. And frankly, the last candidates was a little bit disappointing in that regard for me. Where this one, I'm really excited about how many fresh ideas are being played, some different openings. Even when they play the same openings, it's new and different. You know, like normally people go, oh, the Petrov, Dreary, whatever, you know, and then we're getting exciting games in whatever opening, Petrov, Berlin, anything. I mean, Nepomniachtchi Vidit was a Berlin, right? Nobody was rolling their eyes about that game. So I think there's really, really fresh chess being played. And some of it comes from Gukesh and Prague, for sure, the really young guys, but they're not the only ones bringing cool stuff. So I'm finding it to be one of the most entertaining tournaments I've watched. I also think that basically everyone except Ali Reza and maybe Abbasov, I don't know as well, but you know, the other six are all at this tournament in quite good form. And that keeps the tournament really tight. That you've got a lot of people who are playing at a level where conceivably they could compete for first, second place. So I expect a much lower final score than last time around where Nepo had plus +5. And so far that seems to be confirmed by how well everybody's playing. My two cents on the candidates.
All right.
All righty. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So Jan Ludvig, I got to see, you know, a tweet where you gave a couple reasons why you think that the eval bar is very important in the sort of big broadcast, so to speak, and should always be there. Do you wanna present your case first, or would you like to hear some of my thoughts from the other side, or we could try to lay out some common ground first, see what are the things we agree on before we get into
disagreement. I think I'll start presenting kind of my perspective. Mm-hmm. I think Norway in many ways is quite unique in the field of chess commentary, in that we have televised chess, and it's actually reaching quite a large percentage of the population in Norway, helped, of course, by the fact that Magnus is certainly an A-list celebrity here. And that means that we also reach a lot of people who never play chess, never really do anything chess related. They don't necessarily have an account on chess.com, but they do like to watch Magnus trying to become the world champion, trying to win the Champions Chess Tour events without necessarily having any sort of chess background. And that presents an audience challenge because we're trying to make the broadcast, we're not trying to disrespect the game of chess, but we also want to make it understandable for people. And we want to have entertainment be quite an important factor, in addition to at least what is my style, is that I really also try to feel like people, I try to make people feel like they understand what's going on without that necessarily being the case, but you can by pointing out some nice things in a more general sense, make people think that, oh yeah, no, I am really understanding what's going on. And then they don't necessarily are able to replicate that playing themselves, but the feeling of understanding is part of what makes them want to watch more in the future. So that's my perspective. I also want to clarify something for today in terms of, I think it's important that we don't mix up the discussions, because I think this discussion has many different layers. Mm-hmm. My impression for you guys is that you guys are really into this, the eval bar, whether that's available to the audience or not. And that the audience can follow what is happening based on the computer's current evaluation of the situation. I would say that's one category. And then there's one category, which I'm the most interested in, which is whether the commentators should have access to not only the eval bar, but the actual moves being recommended by the computer. And then there's a third thing, which I haven't really talked about on Twitter, but that I'm really interested in, which is whether we are doing enough to kind of have the awareness in the organizations that are doing, that are hiring chess commentators, whether the chess.coms, the problem right now is that there, it's almost only chess.com, right? But your chess.coms, your Lee Chesses, your chess dojos, and other more like fringe actors, whether these people who are responsible for the broadcast, hiring the broadcasters, do they have a plan for how they want to use their talent? And are they aware of the differences in style between commentators and what kind of mixes well. Because what's good for classical chess may not be good for blitz chess. Yes. And someone who's good at rapid chess may struggle in classical time controls. And something I'm really interested in, partly because I feel like there's a lack of work being made in this field, is that I had a conversation, my last conversation with chess.com. They had hired like a director of broadcast. So it felt like they were actually kind of sitting down and writing some do's and don'ts of chess commentary and actually trying to like formalize what kind of they think are the good things to do and what they would like to avoid and so on and so forth. And in this conversation, I realized that I feel I'm pretty good at chess commentary. I've done a lot of it. It's been my job now for 11 years. And I went out of that meeting feeling like chess.com didn't understand the individuality of the commentators. They were like, we want to focus on the interaction between the commentators. And that's fine. That's a priority you can make. I disagree with it. But what I realized is that they think your Naroditskis and your Hesses and your Hammers and your Trents and Gustavsons and Svidlers and Lekos and all of these names, I felt from that meeting that chess.com considered those interchangeable. And that you could put any one commentator with any other commentator and expect the same result.
Yeah. Which is absurd if they've watched any of their own broadcasts, because I've been broadcasting for a long time as well. And, you know, you get matchups of commentators that are great and others that are just obviously not good. Like the viewership within 10 minutes is like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah,
and in that, it also means that a commentator can be good, but appear bad with the wrong matchup. Or especially if you get a matchup that's, you get one matchup one day and then another one the other day, because chemistry is built. And you cannot have chemistry with a co-commentator on the first day. That is something that develops over time. So I'm really interested in that. I know that's not really the topic for today, but that's, I think it relates to the other questions, because using the eval bar and whether commentators should have access to the engine moves, all of this is related to some kind of best practice within chess commentary. And I just don't feel like that best practice has been established. And chess.com, as the monopolizer, kind of has to be the one to do that. And to be fair, I haven't really spoken to them a lot in the last 2 years. I haven't gotten a gig in forever from them. So I don't know what has happened there in the meantime. But I was somewhat disappointed that I felt that their impression was the individuality of the commentators are interchangeable, because I really, really, really think they're not.
Yeah, you brought up some great points there. I think one of the more interesting things here to, I guess, highlight is that like the chess commentary game has definitely been changing in the last couple of years. Like for years, we had this just classic structure of like two commentators just like looking at the live game, doing analysis. And then in the last couple of years, chess.com has definitely been moving towards more of like an esports vibe, where the commentary is like getting more exciting. You have commentators like literally yelling at the screen, going crazy, almost like football announcers. Whereas in the past, chess commentary, I think, would see this very rarely. And I feel like that all kind of relates to this eval bar thing, because the eval bar, I guess, okay, to give my two quick cents on it, because I'm generally pro eval bar for, and I want to make it clear, for the big broadcasts, like the official commentary, the one that the masses are tuning into, chess.com. I think for Dojo's purposes, like, we are more focused on like the educational, the instructional side, and we can argue about whether the eval bar can be instructive or not. But from my point of view, for the big broadcast, I would say their main goal is entertainment. And I think the eval bar does support the entertainment aspect. I also want to throw out a second point that I feel like from a news perspective, like, I think about the St. Louis Chess Club broadcast. I think they actually have a good hybrid model now, where they have the two main commentators that are not using the engine, first giving their human take on the position, and then they jump to someone using the engine, usually a strong grandmaster. They can kind of discern between what's a cool engine line, what's nonsense. But the thing I wanted to make about, the point I want to make about how it's kind of news, it's like everyone has access to the engines. And so if the computer is showing that a player has a forced win, or they missed a forced draw, or there was a crazy stalemate in the position or something, it's kind of odd for these broadcasts to like talk about the position and then not mention what the computer thinks when like all the fans have access to it. Like, it feels kind of silly. It's like it's like they're delivering the news of the game, like what's happening, and to not use like the engine, which is just this incredibly powerful tool, just gives an answer right away. To me, that seems a bit odd. So that's kind of my whole thing, why I'm very much pro the eval bar for the big broadcasts. But yeah, I know David is against, and I'm not actually sure where Jesse stands. So
Trader Kostya just added a really good bullet point to the ones that you had online, Jan, because you hadn't mentioned that one. And that is a pretty good point. If like everybody in chat knows that White's winning, the only people who don't know are the commentators. That could look a little silly.
Yeah, it becomes a disconnect between the viewer and the commentators. I think I favorited a tweet that was in the similar vein. What I do want to say to this, though, is that if my argument goes from wanting to do chess to the masses, and if I feel like the way I want to do things is prioritizing the 800s, and the even the non-chess playing people, then those people aren't really sitting in chat with engines. The percentage of people who chat on a stream is very low, and it's going to be the more eager people. And while I do believe that the eval bar is a must to present the current kind of situation on the board in a broader broadcast, I also think it's important to remember that these broadcasts are then aimed at trying to expand the game and reach out to the broader masses, and we may not necessarily want to deal with the specialized viewers that are sitting with computers and know what's going on. I agree with the point wholeheartedly. I do think the commentator should be using engine lines and such, but it's not to cater to the opinionated voice, big voiced kind of already chess centric minority, but it's simply because I believe if the eval bar shows that White is winning, well, I've been taught from my TV host, the host of the chess broadcasts that we do, one of the things he always tells us and he's been in sports. He's done so many different sports also. But one of the things he says is that you gotta talk about what's happening on the screen that the audience can see. If one of the players is making a face or something, you comment on that because you're conveying what the audience can see. You're putting that into context, which also means if I believe that the eval bar always should be there, it means that when the eval bar spikes up, then it's our responsibility to explain to the audience why this has happened.
Okay. Well, David, it's our time for us, buddy. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
Sure. I can say something.
All right.
So I think there are some pros and cons to with an engine or not, or without an engine, both ways. And you know, I found myself thinking that Costa made a pretty good point there as well. One thing I generally think is that there should be variety in chess broadcasts and chess broadcasting. So there should be some shows that do one thing and some that do another. And you know, we have varieties of audience and varieties of commentators. And so, like, even when you talk about best practices, Jan Ludwig, I think, like, if we came up with a best practice that was too prescriptive and every broadcast were the same, even that wouldn't be right to me. Right? Like, I think we should have, you know, one segments. Kind of broadcast and another, maybe one with lots of jokes, another with lots of like nitty gritty analysis, another that's like really for beginners, et cetera. Why not have a present a whole variety?
I agree. I think that's a great argument. And I guess what I'm the reason I'm mentioning it is because if there's going to be like a documentation of the process of best practices, the team most likely to do that is the team with, you know, I don't know how many they have, but, you know, 300, 400 employees. And chess.com's main objective will be reaching out to the masses. So when I'm saying I want some kind of someone to sit down and talk about the best practices, what I'm talking about is the kind of best practices for reaching out to the masses, which I think is the chess.com's main goal, essentially. But that doesn't discount that Chess Dojo can do the same thing. You can say, we want to have a stream, a commentary that's focused on improvement, and these are the best practices for how we're going to make that happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, now it's good. So we each agree there's a room for the other person's type of commentary. But now let me make one or two arguments. I'm going to see if I can make my biggest problem with the engine, if I can consolidate it into kind of one big thematic thing. My biggest problem, I think, overall, and I'm not saying it's an irremediable or irremediable or, you know, unfixable problem, but my biggest problem with the use of the engine is that I feel like it misrepresents what chess is completely and fundamentally. So when people are watching an engine bar and using that as a score or as a sense of who's going to win, or they think that an answer is right in front of you, etc., immediately, no uncertainty, no difficulty, no other possibility, just 0.00 has this finality to it, right? To me, that's fundamentally misrepresenting what chess is truly like. To me, chess is uncertain, it's difficult, and it's full of possibility, right? And when you or I look at a position without an engine, without an eval bar, without anything, it's like, oh my gosh, thousands of things could happen. And this position here is linked in some ways to thousands of things that have happened and that we've seen before, but there's always some little difference. And there's the players and their differences and their tendencies and how they might react to different situations and what their day was like yesterday and et cetera. And all of that is intricate and complicated and interesting, right? And then you get a 0.00 or a bar that shoots up to the top or a bar that yo-yos like during, I don't know if you saw Gukesh and Abasov had a queen endgame, right? But you can imagine there's a lot of queen and one pawn versus queen endings where occasionally you have a chance at a draw, but the weaker side rarely finds it and usually eventually succumbs, right? So like the side with the extra pawn wins 90-some% of the time from a human discussion and sense of how the games go versus the engine bar might either say, now it's zero, now it's plus 1,000, now it's zero, now it's plus 1,000, right? So all of those things to me, those like immediate answers, those like very crude attempt at giving a score or a sense of what's going on, I think they're so the opposite of chess, of what chess really is, that in general, it can be super misleading and not really give or show people what chess is really about and what makes chess amazing. And you could suck people into some kind of esport kind of thing, but if it's just to get a bunch of people hooked on bullet games with, you know, with stroke-inducing eval bars bumping up and down like lights in a club, then to me, there's no extra value in people being into chess. They may as well be doing Candy Crush, right? If chess is Puzzle Rush and bullet chess and boom, 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 meh. No special value to people doing chess.
Yeah, let me expand on David's argument. So I feel like Hammer's intuition and loads of other people out there, and to be fair, we are the minority opinion at the dojo. The intuition to me is captured in a broadcast of poker I saw. So it's poker is an inferior game to chess. And what they will do is they'll like show the cards. The players themselves can't see the cards, but then the audience can, and then they'll show percentages, like win percentages of what can happen. And for that, the audience, the intuition is that the audience is going to be brought in by something at stake, like money, and then the reactions of the players, both the winner and the loser. And in that way, for an inferior game like poker, you have the ability to participate in a human level, even if you don't know anything about poker, right? And so I think that's the intuition of the people who want to do basically something very similar with chess. Okay, so I love what David said. And the way I want to put it for my own framework is I've done a lot of streaming. And what I find is both a viewer of streams with the eval bar and the times that I've seen the eval bar either on accident or on purpose, is that what happens to me as a commentator, okay? This is, you could, I want to put it from a subjective standpoint of the commentator for a second, is that the game itself becomes very uninteresting. It becomes like that poker situation because I already know the answer. And even, I'm like in this godlike view and I'm just waiting to see if the players themselves are going to see the answer. And then I can make dumb comments like, well, they're not in good form today. You know, didn't see that one coming. Ooh, Faruja, man, he's going to have to go home and work on this. And so the level of commentary isn't able then to delve into the game with any kind of curiosity. And what you end up doing then is just kind of making, you know, a kind of repartee between the hosts, you know, saying jokes and this and talking a little bit about history and stuff, but not being able to engage with the game in a substantive way. And one of the things that I think is very fascinating about this is when you're doing commentary and it's interesting and you are into it, you don't actually get tired. And you don't actually need that. You might have to go to the bathroom sometimes, but you actually don't need a break. But if you watch the commentary shows, oh man, those people are taking breaks all the time. And why is it? Because they're exhausted. It's tiring sitting around just waiting for the engine to do something, dude. It's tiring. And then something I feel like I really know is that if I'm watching somebody who's tired, I'm not into that. That's not interesting to me. I want to see someone who's engaged and has an interest in the subject. Okay, a couple more things, and I promise I'm done. I thought Hammer did a nice distinction between different kinds of commentary. And to me, one of the things that's been interesting about What we've been doing this last candidates is there are four games usually, and we're kind of picking and choosing between them. And the problem there is because we're going back and forth, we are often not giving the viewer a sense of where the game stands. And one of the things I like what David was saying, and I just want to put in my own words, is for me, the job of the commentator is kind of to put the position on the board in a way that's understandable on a human level. Like, you could talk about how the position's murky, or you have no idea what's going on. And by that, you're also conveying what the people playing are probably in a very similar situation, even if they're better players than you. So you're conveying that human sense of what is going on. But you can also say, I think white is better here. But then when we have four boards, it's often very difficult. Whereas what Hammer's doing with Naka Stream, you just focus on one game. In some ways, that's my favorite form, because then you're sitting there and you're kind of playing guess the move. You're saying what you think the eval of the position is all the time. And that's cool. And I kind of, even out of this discussion, we were talking earlier in our stream about like maybe having a human eval bar. Like Kostya puts his little eval bar, I put mine, maybe we have a dojo average, it's automatically calibrated or something like that. In any case, that's a difference between like a four board stream and a one board stream that I think is kind of relevant. And I do think it's important to you know, share where we think they're at. And one final thing that I think we can all agree on: so many chess tournaments are boring because there is nothing at stake.
Yes.
This one is cool because, oh my God, there's something at stake. When like Gukesh loses against Faruja, it's like, oh man, David was crying, dog. It was all over, man. And
we were all crying. Know, Jesse was laughing maniacally.
I was like the Darth Vader appreciating old people beating up on young kids, you know, even though Faruja's barely not old, you know. But that's something at stake is so important. And I feel like the commentary of the other like common events, like Magnus will play these other events that are meaningless now. It's so important to have something at stake. Okay, I'm sorry I went kind of long, but there it is. There's my rant.
Well, real quick, Jess, I want to pick up on a couple of things you said. First off, the reason, I'm not sure which broadcast you're referring to, but commentators are often enforced to take ad breaks. So it's not always their fault, right? They have to take a break. But what you said, I've been thinking about this. Yeah, like the Canada's tournament, it's like, the reason it's so compelling is the only tournament with serious stakes. But what I want to pick up on is like the eval bar often adds stakes for the viewer, because there's this question of, oh, will they find the move or won't they? And it's just like this immediate drama that's kind of built in to the shows, which I think is cool. I want to say I definitely agree with what David was saying about how the engine and all the eval bar, it is quite misleading for the viewer. And it gives people a sense that chess is easy, and how could they not find that move? And oh, they're so bad. It was so obvious. Everyone knew what the move was. How could they not see it? I think that's a bit of a shame. I feel like it's not the biggest thing in the world, because again, I think the main purpose is entertainment, and the people that end up getting into chess, it doesn't take that long for them to understand that the players are not engines. They're rarely gonna, you know, play engine perfect chess. And I think once you start getting into it, you start following broadcasts, and with the help of very good commentators that explain what's engine nonsense and what's actually findable for a player, I think people start to get a sense of like, oh yeah, yeah, the players are rarely matching the engine. Sometimes they do, but often they're gonna miss it. And I think people do eventually understand that.
And just to then hop on to the point Kostya is making here, I do also think it makes a difference whether someone's coming in to chess kind of like their interest in chess, right? There's a difference between the person who thinks, what is this? This is interesting. I want to see what this is. To the next step, then being playing themselves, but maybe playing very poorly. Maybe they then still kind of like the broadcast they originally started at. But there definitely is a scope for a person's interest to be piqued and then graduating to some of the more niche streams, if that's what they like. And I think, well, David's, I think David just really, he put it in such a really nice way. And I do agree with almost everything you said. It's just that I think there is where I want to make the distinction between the chess improvement commentary and the kind of the stuff with the broader appeal, right, so that we try and get in the new people or the people who don't want to spend more time on chess other than watching the show that they already appreciate for what it is. But some of those, they will get hooked on chess and they will then kind of graduate out of the mainstream stream and then rather go to your chess dojos or your Svidler and Gusti and those kind of broadcasts, which once again just to me emphasizes also what you said, David, that there's one of the most important things is that there are different broadcasts with different purposes, right, that can definitely fill different needs.
Yeah. Let me clarify something though. I'm not saying that like a broadcast in our style would be better because people are going to learn more or get better from it. I actually think it's more entertaining, more engaging, more interesting. You know, I don't insist that people improve, you know. I'm not out here like, oh no, you've got to be playing if you want to watch, and you've got to be improving if you want to be playing, you know. I'm not really, you know, that kind of hardcore like that, even though our channel has, you know, a reputation for people improving, you know, from the kind of work we're doing. I just think showing the true drama of chess, the uncertainty, the difficulty, all of that, I think that heightens the drama, right? I actually think those like eval bar things hurt the drama. I think they're generally speaking, and I'm open to people trying different things, right? But I think they're actually lessening the excitement and the interest and the entertainment and so forth.
It's a fair point. I could honestly see it both ways. Like if we imagine the Faruja Gukesh game, I'm sure the eval bar was swinging like during that time scramble. But it was no less exciting for us to follow it without the eval bar. Like we clearly understood it's a crazy situation that's happening on the board. For me personally, I just want to say like it's way more fun to watch the games without the engine, like with my friends David and Jesse. Like that's my preference. Even if we weren't streaming and we're following or we're sweating someone's game, like, yeah, it's so much more fun to watch without the bar, without the engine. You put yourself into the shoes of the player and you can really feel like, oh, he's stressing out about this move, he doesn't know what to do about this move, and you can really feel it. But for me personally, if I was just going to tune in to some random tournament and I turn on the chess.com broadcast or chess24 or whatever, I might be watching for 5 minutes, not really into the mood to like get into it and try to figure out what's going on. Oftentimes I do just want to see the immediate eval, like, all right, what's the last, you know, eval of the position, what's happening, who's ahead. And then that'll actually get me to stick around for a bit longer if I actually, get an immediate sense of like who's leading or what's happening, or like someone's winning, but they have to find some engine line. You know, I think just when I'm watching alone, that's, I don't know, that's my personal preference.
One of my annoyances with this whole engine eval bar ruins the excitement argument is what Kostya was talking about the commentators. I genuinely feel like you're underplaying the commentator's role when you're saying that the eval bar will ruin everything. The eval bar is a small part of the overall broadcast. And a lot of the arguments I saw on Twitter when there were a lot of different perspectives being presented, a lot of people just was like, it's either one or the other. It was very black and white. Mm-hmm. And I think just The eval bar, I will agree, comes with great responsibility. And I definitely don't get it right all the time. But I do think that with the right awareness, with a commentator who knows the limitations of the eval bar, and also the benefits and the responsibilities you get as a result of displaying it on the screen and showcasing it to your viewers, the responsibility does then become to bridge the gap between this is the solution and saying, well, we are humans playing chess, and explaining that this idea is going to happen because the computer's idea is one that a human can very much relate to. And then you will say, well, in this position, I don't think the eval bar represents the human experience. And one of the things I take the most pride in, especially on the Norwegian TV2 broadcasts, is when I can, number one, predict a move that was not on the computer's top three. We, on the Norwegian broadcast, we always have the top three suggestions on screen. So I take some pride in saying, I think Magnus is going to do this. And what I'm especially proud of is whenever the computer says white has an advantage, and I can go and say, I feel this position is easier to play with the black pieces. And while computers may feel it's better for white with, you know, crazy good accurate play, the moves required to do so are not the moves that would come naturally to a human. And I believe that in a couple of moves, we will see a turnaround in this game, showcasing the practical difficulty of the position. And that is a super important part of the commentator's job, to bridge the gap between the eval bar being the solution and that everyone is sitting watching, not really knowing what's going on, because that would be the alternative, right? Either you have the eval bar and you have the answer, black, or you're trying to figure out the answer, but you're not sure. And then the audience cannot actually be sure what is going on, if they, like Kostya, once and there definitely are people like this. There are people who will come in 5 minutes at a time just to get an update on how it's going. And that's part of why I think the eval bar is so important.
Right. So let me see if I'm getting this right. You're saying that, because this is something I also had in my points that I was typing out earlier when I was thinking about this. There's a responsibility for the commentator to say, this is the eval bar, but this is maybe the more human odds or evaluation or situation. Yes. Right? You have to sort of bridge from one to the other. And it's also your responsibility to discuss how difficult things are and correct the impression that I am concerned about, right?
Yes.
Concern, your responsibility is to correct this potential negative that it says, here's just an answer, things are so easy. And those are two pretty big responsibilities to put on the commentators, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I imagine for you also, like, something that sort of hurts our feelings or touches our coconuts is when people come in and they're like, oh, Magnus is an idiot. Why didn't he play 2795? You know, he must have, like, you know, stopped training 3 months ago or something like that, right? Because people have access to this thing that's better than everybody. And just
the percentage of viewers chatting
yeah.
is very low. And okay. The vocal minority will always, but that's not our responsibility is bigger than to kind of let ourselves be annoyed by a 1%.
Yeah, if okay, I could so just jump on that.
Get you.
So David, I was with you. Like I used to be super annoyed, right, by fans that think they know better than like Magnus or Nepo or like these top GMs, right? Because they're armed with the engine and like they have this false sense of they understand something. But I was looking at like poker Twitter, basketball Twitter, football Twitter, and I realized like every major sport has their incredibly dumb fans. It's just like one of the costs of popularity. And I think like if we want chess to be like a major thing, like consider like a major sport in the Olympiad, the World Championship, it's all important. We're just going to have to accept that there's going to be a mass of fans that don't know what they're talking about. And what I'm trying to say, it's not exclusive to chess. It's really like in every game. And there will be arguments that's so funny on Reddit, but like people discussing like which sport has like the dumbest fans. There's big debates. Like everyone feels like their thing, like fitness, like, oh, fitness has the dumbest masses, or it's like basketball that has the dumbest, it's like poker. And so I think actually that's fine, you know, and I think it's kind of beautiful that the fans, you know, they're allowed to participate with their opinions. And like Jan was saying, you know, we have to kind of swallow that as chess creators. Like that's just part of the scene.
One thing I want to touch back on is I think Hammer said something that is also the common intuition of the people who are really into the eval bar, which includes chess.com, by the way. Chess.com has made it so the eval bar is everywhere. It's like when I go in there, it's default. When I go to look at those games, it's default. It's just show me, boom, all of the evals right there. And I can't, it's almost gotten to the point where it's so pervasive, it's hard to unsee it, even when you're trying not to see it. But the thing is, if somebody is coming, this is the intuition, as I understand, that if somebody knows nothing about chess and just wants to check in every couple minutes to see how it's going, they're not going to go to the stream. They're going to go to that chess.com page, and then boom, it's going to be right there. And then the chess.com page can facilitate them by either seeing the bar or by showing variations or whatever. And it's very accessible. And if I guess, you know, when I go, you know, when I'm at the park with the kids and I want to see what's going on in the games, I go to that page, I see the eval bar, whether I like it or not, you know, and that's going to be the quick fix for the people who just want to follow the games. And so if you don't have the eval bar, you can get what you then get is you get a human perspective. It'd be like, oh, I can go see immediately. And loads of the people watching our stream are doing this, you know, and they pretend to be clever by shouting out into who's at us. So that happens. But in any case, they can see what the computer perspective is. But then with us, they still have the untainted vision. Because once you see that eval bar, you can talk about making a bridge. No. There's no bridge. You have been infected, my friend. Once you see that thing, you can try to discuss this and that. But since you know that that machine is so much better than you, you are not going to defend your own personal opinion against the beast, because you're like, well, the beast is right. You know, so
that goes against what I specifically said.
Okay,
Jesse. That goes specifically against that my proudest moments are when I am disagreeing with the eval bar and do get it right in terms of that the game develops in the direction that I was predicting.
I totally imagine that those are your proudest moments. But when I watch that kind of commentary, those proud moments are far and few between. You know, there's just, not just your comment. I'm not saying you're, I'm just talking about any of these commentators. And I would love, I can't tell you how much I would love to see these greats that are out there. And I would love to have their human appreciation of the game. And I can't get it. It's just gone.
I'm not sure it's as rare as you make it out to believe. And once again, I do feel like your and David's argument once again falls very much on the thing that you don't trust the commentators to be good at their job. And this is why I brought up one of the first things I brought up was kind of like how chess.com is organizing their commentators, right? because I believe that the skill of the commentator is incredibly important.
More important than how you set up the eval bar or not, even.
No.
Is if you have the commentator. No.
No.
So terrible commentator with an eval bar is already better.
Oh, no. No.
No, I don't think that's what Hammer was saying.
No, that, no, sorry, that's not what I'm saying. Yeah, no, I guess, yeah, no, I guess I am saying that the commentator is more important.
Okay.
But I just you need to find a commentator who uses the eval bar in a good way and knows its limitations and the responsibilities that lies on the commentator I couldn't kind of relate to what you were saying, David, is that I would never have a bad commentator with an eval bar.
Okay.
Because I believe that I can identify what a good commentator is and what isn't. But that also relates to what I was mentioning, that there is at the moment no one who can necessarily rank the commentators, because we don't have a shared understanding of what the commentator's responsibility is in certain things. And I don't mind what you were saying, David. I don't mind ranking the commentators in different things. Like I said very early on, someone who's good at Blitz may not be good at Rapid and may not be good at Classical. Those are very different kind of broadcasts, potentially requiring different skill sets. You can rank commentators in different segments, be it time controls, be it who you're trying to reach out to, be it, you know, with eval bar, without eval bar, focusing on wowing the audience with lots of quick calculations a la Naroditsky, or trying to really make them understand, try and really explain to very new players or non-players what is going on, a la Howell and Hammer. But in order to do all of this, we first need to agree what are the skill sets that make a commentator good within these segments. And that's why I talked about the commentator's individuality, as I perceive chess.com not appreciating. Because if you don't agree what skills are needed for what a broadcast, then you can't even go to your commentator teams, all the people that you're paying and hiring and who's on the payroll, and some are freelancers and whatnot, but you cannot kind of say, well, this person we like for this kind of broadcast, this person we like with this person, them two paired together is good, and so on and so forth. And what you sometimes get, for instance, on Reddit, is that you get 400 responses. Who are your favorite commentators? And people will have, yes, the worst commentator is Hammer. And then you'll have a lot of other people who say the best commentator is Hammer. And both of those people can be right. Because if someone saw me when I was having a bad day, or maybe when I was doing a segment that I'm not necessarily good for, and then other people who are kind of more in the target group of who I'm trying to reach, like if a dojo were to watch me do commentary, they're going to say I'm terrible. But on Norwegian television, they're going to say I'm fantastic. And then these two people start arguing on a Reddit thread when they're both kind of right, because they're both wanting different things and they're not. So I feel like we need to separate the different styles of broadcast, the goals of the broadcast, the time controls of the broadcast, and we need to kind of figure out what are the skills necessary and who are the people who have those skills, and then who are paired well together and all of that. What it comes back to is that I wholeheartedly believe that a good commentator can to the best of their ability, with bias, but at least with some being aware of the bias it creates, have the eval bar, and even have the computer's recommendation without it being a massive detriment to the viewer base they are trying to reach. Now that I'm saying it out loud, very much of the arguments I'm trying to make is based on how I do commentary. Mm-hmm. And that is, I am more so than others trying to reach a mass audience of people who are not necessarily chess players themselves, or have like a quite...
Well, you have this TV experience, which is very different than what most chess players have. Even if somebody's on the quote-unquote bigchess.com broadcast, it's already more chess-oriented audience than you get on TV, right?
Yeah, so TV2, Botes, and Hikaru, what all of those broadcasts have in common is that there is a lot of... There's more non-chess people there than there would be on a dojo cast, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me push or challenge you on something, Hammer. If you're a professional broadcaster, and let's say you're not, how do you remember, or how do you get into the mind of a player struggling with the position at the board? Like, how do you make that bridge? How do you remember what it feels like when you're sitting there and you have the answer, right? Like, you're looking at the engine line, and Nepo's looking at the board, and he's in Hikaru's prep. How do you remember and feel and bring in what it feels like to be Nepo in that spot?
I mean, how do you play chess, right? It becomes intuition and instinct. And you're gonna get a lot of stuff wrong, unfortunately. You are biased by the knowing the computer's recommendation. I think Anish Giri called me out on that immediately on Twitter, and I could do nothing but agree that you do get biased by the engine. You do it is difficult, and it's probably impossible to completely remove the damage that is done to your own ability to think, but it's not as bad as you are making it out to be. And I believe that the benefit to the viewer outweighs the detriment to the broadcast. In that, frankly, when you have a broadcast to a wider audience, they're not really gonna care whether you mess up the move you make or your thinking processes, because they're not good enough at chess to know that you've fucked up. Which is, it's a paradox. But I do still think that it's something I do for their benefit in the long run. And when I make mistakes, I can say, oh, actually, I can say that I made a mistake or rather explain if something happens that I hadn't considered but was a very human thing to do. I can say, I can just start over, right? Because, oh, he made a mistake. The eval bar is moving. Okay, but then my job as the commentator comes forward and I'm like, well, okay, so this computer didn't like this, but the reason the player did this is for this and this reason. The same reason I know that I made a mistake is the same reason I can explain that something is a human way of thinking.
So guys, we got hard stop in 10 minutes. So we'll have to start wrapping this up soon.
Well, okay. Yeah, I really wanted to say something about Jesse said. The
final word. Yeah, but go on, keep going.
Yeah, because Jesse pointed, he hit something that I think is just so important for chess commentary, and maybe even it's the future. And I feel like the way Jesse talked about it, he didn't even realize the importance of what he was saying.
He does that. Yeah, he does that.
You guys are broadcasting 4 games or 8 games, I don't know, from the candidates tournament. I'm doing 1 game for Hikaru. Mm-hmm. When I'm doing both test streams, I'm doing one. Well, now I'm doing 2 games because both sisters are playing, but I'm very focused on one game mostly. When we're doing Magnus in Norway, 1 game only. The other games, it's as if they don't exist almost. Mm-hmm. And what I find with these 1 game broadcasts is that the viewership that they get is often, it's a cooler viewership to have because you're all there for the same reason. You're all cheering for the same thing. Yeah. You're pushing towards, oh, I'm hoping Magnus wins. I'm hoping Hikaru wins. And that sense of community that creates also affects the way you can do your commentary. And I just think it's a very interesting way to go because it also makes my job so much easier. Like you explained, Jesse, right? That it's easier to stay focused on one thing versus switching everything. And
so what do you?
And
do
one
then?
Of the things I believe that is going to be the future for chess commentary is that I think for the candidates, for instance, the biggest tournament. Why are there not 8 streams in addition to all the other segments and whatnot and so on and so forth? I want to see a Hikaru stream. We have that. But I also want to see a Karana stream. Where's the Karana fans? Where are they going to gather? What if they can watch it at the same place, having Chirilla, or if he's busy working, try and find someone else? And do commentary on that and create that community with that one game being the special focus of the broadcast. And you can bring in other languages, French stream for Firouzja. I don't know. You can have a Farsi stream also. I don't know. And then you have a Russian stream for Nepomniachtchi. Although I guess now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm sure that exists somewhere.
It does.
Indian streams, right? There is one Indian stream. Why are there not 3? Dukesh, Vidit, Prag, they're individual people and they have individual fan bases. It's not like everyone's cheering necessarily for all the Indian. It's rare to have 3 from one country, maybe, but have one stream each would be very cool to have the fan bases establish themselves. And I'm even forgetting who the rest of the players are in the tournament. Abasov and Azeri stream. Yeah.
I agree with you,
this
John.
Doesn't only apply to the candidates. This really could apply to any tournament, but of course it's better with a high stakes.
No, it's super fun to sweat one player. Okay, this will be the last point for me, and then maybe everyone can like kind of sum up their thoughts. But I think it's a great point that it really comes down to the commentators to kind of explain the eval and the engine. And one point I just want to make on this is like, I think if you're going to go with the engine on the stream, you should go full engine. For me, the worst commentary is when the commentator sees the eval bar, but then doesn't have access to the lines. And then it just becomes a game of like, guess the move. And that comes down to the commentators. I think they should just not do that. You shouldn't just like start guessing like, is this the move the engine wants? No, that's not it. Is this the move the engine wants? No, to me, that's just embarrassing. I would rather just have them check the engine and then discern for the viewers whether that's a useful engine suggestion or not. So if you're going to go engine, useful engine. And then if not, then don't do it like the dojo stream and then that's way more fun. People get the human insight. I saw people like were saying like Anand on the official FIDE commentary. He's like, he's trapped by this eval bar because he wants to give all these amazing suggestions, but even he can't help but see that the eval bar goes up and down when he's suggesting moves. And it doesn't matter how strong you are, that's always going to trip you up as a player, knowing that you might be like blundering with your analysis. So if you're going to use the engine and then use your commentator skills to explain to the audience what the human players are actually thinking about the position.
For my final 2 cents, I actually want to just do a question. This is a real question. I don't have the answer to it. So forever, I've been not using the eval bar. This is going back to pre-COVID. They brought me into St. Louis to do commentary. They put me in Maurice Ashley's spot, dude. They were like, you can have his fancy computer. It was pristine. It was awesome. It was the strongest computer ever. And they let me touch it, you know, and I still didn't want to use it. So I feel like, anyways, I feel like this is going on forever. But here's my question. Why right now with Hammer's tweet about this eval bar debate, why did it go ballistic? I honestly don't have the answer. So I'd be interested if somebody has a take on that to finish this show off.
I think there's definitely people that are, let's say, pro eval bar, feeling elitism, I guess, coming from the dojo side of the argument, right? Feeling like it's very elitist, you know, someone tunes in, they're very much at beginner level, they don't know anything that's going on, and now they have to like sit there and like listen to like 3 minutes of human analysis to try and get the sense of the evaluation. So I think that's kind of the main, I think, from the pro eval bar side.
But we didn't start this. We didn't post or say anything about this topic. We just saw other people discussing it first.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how this exploded, but yeah, it clearly lit a fuse. But I guess this culture war, you know, it has been brewing for a while. Like, I remember this famous tweet from Nepo where he was very upset about PogChamps, like, stealing the attention. I feel like this has, it's related.
Popcorn chess,
exactly.
Right. Elitism versus, you know, the real shrine of chess or chess for the masses.
Real is chess, that horse exactly.
Chess or not, yeah. Real chess, et cetera. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely, it comes up in multiple areas of the chess discourse. My final take, so that we can give Hammer the last word. My final little take or point would be, I think there are challenges to broadcasting with the eval bar and challenges to broadcasting without it. So we've talked a little bit about the responsibilities and like what a job a commentator has to do with the eval bar, right? We haven't talked about, you know, the negatives or cons as much of like the no eval bar, but we mentioned that, you know, people could pop in and not know what the situation is, right? I believe that there could be ways to mitigate the problems or the cons of each, because I think they each have pros and cons, right? So just as a commentator who's really good at saying, well, we've discussed this already today. A commentator who's good at handling the problems with the eval bar being up or with the engine lines being available, I imagine that there's also a way that a no eval bar stream could compensate for its challenges or difficulties. We could find ways to have some graphic representation on the stream that gives people a sense of what's going on when they pop in, if the commentators are not at that moment always discussing what the evaluation is or who's got the chance of winning or whatever, right? Like, we could find graphical representations. We could have something going that could mitigate that problem so people could pop in and see, oh yeah, that's about what's going on right now, without it being that finality and that certainty of the eval bar, right? It could be something that gives you a sense of what's going on graphically, but also includes the uncertainty and the myriad possibilities that I prize and value and, you know, think is important to really show people this is what chess is really like. And I would just ask Hammer one last question. Do you not think that if you thought on it long enough, you could conceive of a way of setting up a no eval, no computer broadcast that could still be a good broadcast for the masses with the right recipe, the right graphics, the right commentators? Do you not think that it's solvable and you could actually have a good broadcast like that?
I could have a good broadcast, but I don't think I could have the best broadcast. And I really like what you just said, David. I'm going to end now because I know Jesse has to go. But I would like to end with a challenge to you guys, because you guys are innovators, entrepreneurs. And I would like to challenge you guys into, number one, like David was saying, find a way of conveying the situation at the board in a good way without using the eval bar. And once you go away from the eval bar, lose the numbers, use faces, have, you know, this complication. You can have like one kind of representation for the complexity and one for who do you think is better and not. And number two, because that is a pet peeve of mine, I would like to challenge you guys to making some sort of a document of what you're doing in your commentary that you believe are good things, what you strive to avoid doing, saying, whatever, in your commentary, and make that the chess dojo, do's and don'ts, best practices for dojo commentary.
I love it.
Yeah, we're into that.
All right, I think we're gonna end it there. Cool. Thank you guys. I think this was a fantastic discussion. Thank you, Hammer, for joining us, and I hope the fans appreciate it as well.
Bye,
everybody.